It's those grand Goldbergs, presented by the makers of High Test Oxidol. Going, going, almost gone. Yes, folks, I mean Oxidol's Jingle Jubilee. Only two more days and this great contest is over. Only two more days left to jingle your way into $1,100. So start jingling today. 8 $100 bills given every day this week, Monday through Friday, just for best last lines to a jingle about Oxidol in washing machines. And besides all that, $1,000 grand prize at the end of the week. $1,000 extra for the week's best daily winner. But today's Thursday, remember. So just today and tomorrow, that's all the time left to get in line for one of those $100 daily prizes and that $1,000 grand prize. So get your pencil right now, because here's the jingle. High Test Oxidol's a delight, said a clever young housewife named Wright. In my washing machine, it gets clothes so clean. Now you just add a last line that rhymes with Wright. A line that rhymes something like, they're really a marvelous sight, and send with your name and address and an Oxidol box top or facsimile to the Goldbergs, Cincinnati, Ohio. Now that's all it takes to line yourself up to win $1,100 before this great contest closes. Now your entry goes in today's contest if it's received today, in tomorrow's if it's postmarked before midnight tomorrow and received in Cincinnati not later than October 3rd. Now, originality, suitability, and aptness are what count. Residents of continental United States, Hawaii, and Canada are eligible. Winners are announced 1 week after each daily contest. Complete printed lists of winners are available upon written request to the Goldbergs, Cincinnati, Ohio, after the final contest. The same jingle is used throughout the contest. Now, your dealer has it and the rules. And you may send any number of entries, just so each is accompanied by an Oxidol box top or facsimile. So don't let anything stop you from sending one or more entries with your name and address to the Goldbergs, Cincinnati, Ohio, today. Now, to be sure and get in line for $1,100 before this great contest closes tomorrow. And wait after today's show for last Thursday's winners. And now, the Goldbergs. Well, the Goldbergs are riding home to New York, and very fast, too. The man they hired, a certain George Stark, is a daring driver. And yesterday, he beat a train to a certain small station. But why? Why, the Goldbergs wanted to know. And then he told them, surprisingly enough, that he was picking up his baby, which he intended taking to his mother. And then we heard what he said to the woman who brought the child, and it sounded very, very queer. What is Stark up to? Listen.
Rosalie, darling, put up the windows on the side so the baby shouldn't get a draft.
All right, Ma.
She's sleeping. Sleeping very tightly. Baby's sleeping and Uncle David's sleeping in the trailer. It's all right. You can talk, Daddy. She's fast asleep. It's all right. You can talk. Button up your neck, Rosalie, please.
All right.
Your baby's sleeping, George.
That's good. You don't have a radio in this car, do you?
No, why? Is there anything you want to hear?
No, nothing special. Can I trouble you for a cigarette? I'll stop and get some later.
I'm sorry, I only have a cigar.
Well, I'll have to stop then.
Rolling along.
He seems awfully nervous to me, Ma.
Who's Emily?
The chauffeur.
To me too, Ma.
Be a man alone with a child.
You didn't see a newspaper this morning, did you?
No. What's he want a newspaper for?
Well, Samuel, on account of tomorrow, maybe. He must be nervous. He wants to know. Everybody wants to know. It's like a fever. Why, Samuel, why did you...
I don't know, Mother. What did he turn for? We're supposed to stay on Route 6.
George, well, why did you turn off?
I want to get some cigarettes. I want to get a newspaper.
Well, we'll be putting on about 15 miles that way if we go through the town.
That's all right. I'll make it up.
Is the baby sleeping, Molly?
Yes, just fast asleep.
Say, George, there's a speed limit on these roads. The state troopers...
I thought you said you saw one.
Why, are you afraid of them?
No. Why should I be afraid of them? I just don't want it to cost you anything if we get caught speeding. Afraid? I got nothing to be afraid of.
Chanelle got up. If when we stop, I'd like to warm a bottle for the baby.
She's still sleeping, ain't she?
Yeah, but anyway, nevertheless, I'll warm it good so it'll stay warm and we wouldn't have to stop after.
Here are some stores. Stop here.
All right.
I'll go out and get your paper.
No. That's all right. I'll be right back.
Will you get me 2 cigars, please?
Okay.
Gee, what is he so nervous?
Who isn't nervous these days? Who isn't nervous? How's the baby?
Sweet. I'm glad she's sleeping at least. Jake.
Yeah?
Just look.
What?
I just want you to look and don't get mad and don't howl. I just want you to look. Look, this is all hand-stitched, no?
Oh. What?
Here, look. Look at the baby's jacket.
And if yes?
I mean if yes, look. Even the dress. All handmade, Jake. Jake, there's clothes and there's clothes.
So what?
Something awfully funny here.
Please. What's so funny? How do you know where this clothes came from? He must have been a chauffeur for rich people before he took this job. And maybe they gave the clothes to him.
But anyway...
Please, without buts. You're not writing a scenario now. Molly, please.
All right, Jake. I'm just saying, sir. So why didn't he introduce us to the lady who brought the baby on the train? Why didn't he say if she's the mother or if she's wife?
Molly, please, don't put ideas in my head.
Here he comes.
Coming.
And please, don't start building up hallucinations. Please. Things are going smoothly. Let him go.
All right, sir.
Did you get your paper?
Yeah.
My cigar, please?
Yeah.
I forgot to take out the milk.
We can do that later. I've got to get to a telegraph office. I want to send a telegram. I'll make up all this time I'm losing for you.
Telegram now.
Sure.
Did you see what you were looking for in the newspaper?
Said I was looking for anything.
Well, I only thought...
Sammy.
And here's the telegraph office.
Oh, where?
Over there, on the other side of the street.
Oh, I see it.
You'll take the bottle off, please, of the milk.
We can wait till we get out of this town, can't we?
Well, if you're going out, I mean, anyway, if you're going, I would like very much that you should... Every time the car stops, she opens her eyes.
I won't be a minute.
All right. Ma, Pa, I don't like it.
Like what?
Well, gee, if you can't feel it, Pa, I can't tell you.
Sammy, please, don't let your imagination skip away with you. Please. Maybe he has some private trouble. Evidently he has. Otherwise, he wouldn't be taking the child to his mother. It's just another marriage on the rocks.
Well, if that's all it is, what did he want the newspaper for?
And what did he want to know if we had a radio?
And why doesn't he want to get the bottle for the baby?
And who was the woman who got on the train?
So what do you want me to do, what?
Well, I know what I'd do, Pa. I'd pay him for his 2 days' work and give him the baby and go ahead without him.
Maybe, Jake.
Nonsense. This is all speculation of your own imagination, Molly. And I don't want to hear another syllable pertaining to the same. Not one iota, you hear?
All right, have it your own way, Paul.
Oh, here he comes.
Okay. Now, there won't be no more stops for me until I get the kid to my mother. That'll be sometime tonight.
But just 1 minute, please, before you start the car. Just 1 minute.
What is it, Mom?
Well, take the baby in there, Rosalie, please.
What is it, Molly?
Just 1 minute here, Rosalie, please.
All right.
I'll be right back.
Where are you going?
Where are you going?
I'll be right back. I have to send a telegram also.
To who?
To somebody.
Well, I'll go with you, Mom.
All right. Is anybody?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Pardon me, please. My son was just in here and he sent a telegram.
What?
My son was here and he just sent a telegram. And just this minute he was here in an event and he left and I think he gave you the wrong address. Would you mind showing me the telegram he sent, please?
What's the name, please?
George Stark.
All right, just a minute, please.
Yes, please. George Stark. With a G. S.
We're just sending that wire, lady.
Would you mind if I see if he gave the right address?
Well, let's see. It's sent to...
Would you mind if I see it, please?
No, I guess that's all right.
You don't mind.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh. Thank you very much. Oh.
Was that the right address?
Yes. Yes. I'm afraid it was.
The right address, but what was in the telegram? What did Molly see? And does this throw any more light on George Stark's mysterious doings? Now remember, just today and tomorrow to get in line for $1,100 in Oxydol's Jingle Jubilee. So just add a last line to Oxydol's jingle and send with an Oxydol box top or facsimile and your name and address to the Goldbergs, Cincinnati, Ohio, today. Your dealer has the jingle and the rules. And now, last Thursday's $100 winners. Mrs. E. M. Dibble, Pueblo, Colorado. Mrs. J. Henry Leno, Dallas Center, Iowa. Mrs. Ernest H. Bishop, Quincy, Massachusetts. Mrs. R. M. Ricker, Alcott, New York. Mrs. Mabel B. Jones, Lakewood, Ohio. Mrs. William H. Frank, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mrs. Pearl Davis, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mrs. T. Broadhurst, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Congratulations, winners! Now, be sure to listen to the next episode tomorrow. The Goldbergs find out what they think is the truth. Until then, this is Art Millett speaking for the makers of High Test Oxydol. Now, here's an important time change announcement. If you live in a community which has not been observing daylight saving time, beginning next Monday, September 25th, the Goldbergs will come to you 1 hour later than it now comes to you. If your community has been observing daylight saving time, there will be no change, of course. This program will come to you at the same time as always.
It's important to have a radiantly fresh, attractive-looking complexion, and it's wise to use Camay, the gentle, thorough cleansing soap that helps bring out the natural beauty of your complexion. Try Camay, the safe, effective aid to complexion loveliness.
If you wonder what to do about a certain problem that's troubling you today, why not sit down and ask yourself, when tomorrow comes, what will I wish I had done today? That will help you believe that life can be beautiful. Can be beautiful. An inspiring message of faith drawn from life, written for you each weekday by Carl Bixby and Don Becker. Brought to you by Ivory Flakes. I want to tell you about a pair of stockings that belonged to Miss Helen Lupton. Now, these stockings were treated very hard by Day. Miss Lupton's a nurse, you see, so her stockings had to walk an awful lot, climb stairs, and stretch, and bend. But to make up for the way her stockings were treated in the daytime, Miss Lupton took good care of her stockings every night. Yep, every single night she washed these stockings out in gentle suds of pure ivory flakes. You see, Miss Lupton wanted her stockings to wear a long time. Say, after she'd worn them for 143 miles, they were still in good condition. That was their way of saying thank you for the wonderful care they got every night. See, Miss Lupton heard about ivory flakes when she took part in a stocking endurance test at the Berkshire Knitting Mill stage. Berkshire Knitting Mills, you know, make those beautiful Berkshire silk stockings. Well, they made this important rule during the stocking test. They made each girl promise to wash their stockings every night in ivory flakes. Berkshire, you see, believes that nightly washing with this pure flake soap helps keep the silk thread strong, helps you get long wear. Well, Miss Lupton followed that rule, and looky, looky, looky what happened. She got 143 miles of wear from one pair of stockings. And say, Miss Lupton says she's delighted because she proved to herself that you can really get a lot of wear even from sheer stockings with the proper care. She says, quote, "You can take my word for it. Washing stockings every night with ivory flakes is going to be a regular part of my life from now on. It only takes a minute or two, and it's a real saving," unquote. So, look, why not do as Miss Helen Lupton did? Use ivory flakes for your stockings every night, too. Get the thrifty large-size box and begin tonight. We can promise you this. With good hose to start with, and, of course, barring accidents, this nightly care with pure ivory flakes will help you get extra miles of wear from every pair. Now again, life can be beautiful. Chee-Chee and Stephen Hamilton are low in spirits today. They tried to get work, and it was a pathetic effort because Stephen is still in his wheelchair and Chee-Chee isn't well equipped for a job. Until his accident, Stephen had a splendid chance to resume his law career in the office of Myron Henderson. After that, he wasn't wanted. Oddly enough, Stephen's accident brought him an offer from lawyer George Moore. But Stephen refused it because he believes the man is a shyster who wants to gain sympathy from juries with a crippled assistant. It seems as though Stephen was right because Moore also tried to persuade Chee-Chee to cash in on her recent publicity by accepting a theatrical engagement. Well, it's hard to have to refuse work for the sake of principles, especially when any other job is so hard to get. Now, the next day, morning in the slightly red bookshop. Crisp, cool morning, warmed by a bright sunlight. No kind of a day for sadness and disillusionment, but Chee-Chee doesn't appear to be very happy as she sits curled up in Papa David's big leather chair. Old David Solomon walks back toward her slowly, sadly, wagging his head.
Chee-Chee, so you ain't finding it easy to be happy even on a nice morning like this? Crying with such big wet tears ain't the best way for starting out a new day, darling. Now, look, are you wanting Papa David's extra big handkerchief for wiping away the eyes?
No.
You know, it ain't having any fancy lace edges, but it's big, and it's absolutely okay for crying. And on account, you know, you couldn't roll it up in a little ball like that one.
Papa David, where's Stephen?
Well, he's in the back, Chichi, in his room, reading something or writing something, I don't know.
Gosh, it was awful the way Stephen and me tried to find somebody that wanted us, and nobody did. I don't care so much for myself. I mean, I'm okay, but Stephen's still in a wheelchair, and it must be awful to be like that and get the idea that nobody wants you and no work for you to do.
There's nothing worse, lady.
Did he keep on calling up lawyers and asking them?
Yeah, like a bulldog he was with the telephone in his teeth, and he wouldn't let go. Even with his heart breaking up after every time he called the lawyer's office, and there was the same answer, no, he still kept
on. Why didn't he just quit after a while when he saw there wasn't any use?
Chichi. You know, once when we were alone in the bookshop before you came to live with us, I was maybe had a little sneaking notion that Stephen was, like you said, a quitter on account he wouldn't brace up. But then you came, and now it's different. You see, Leighton, you said call up the lawyer's offices, so Stephen gave out with the promise that he would. So he did.
Yeah, and nothing happened. Gosh, I bet it would have been better if I'd kept my mouth shut. What right have I got to go around buttoning other people's lives, telling them what to do, and just making them feel worse than they did before?
Chichi, Leighton, the future is like a thick veil between us and the tomorrows that are yet to come. What's coming, we don't know. Only what we can see and touch and put our hands on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is what you give out with saying to Stephen. Don't sit down and hold the hands and wait for life to get beautiful. You got to do something. Maybe that's right. Maybe it's wrong. Maybe it bounces back with good results, sometimes bad. But anyhow, you're doing something. That's okay.
That's what I thought, but now I ain't so sure.
Hey, fish ain't biting on the hook if the line ain't in the water. So wait, maybe that was a costume.
Oh, you go, Papa David. I still got tears all over my face.
Okay, Leighton, I'll go. Hey, Jenga. Oh, good morning, please.
Good morning. You're Mr. Solomon, aren't you?
Yeah, you're positively.
I've heard Gigi talk so much about you, and I met you once in the hospital right after Stephen came back. I'm awfully glad to see you again.
Yeah, Gigi was talking about me.
Oh, you don't know who I am, do you?
Well, maybe I should know if I had my faraway looking glasses on.
I'm Kate Henderson.
Oh, yeah. Miss Henderson.
I just dropped in to see Stephen Hamilton. He's here, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen him since he went back to the wheelchair. I was awfully sorry about that.
Yeah, I know.
Don't be afraid, Mr. Solomon. I'm not going to say anything to hurt Stephen. Honestly, I'm not. I have an idea the Henderson family has hurt him enough. My father's a little rigid in some of his ideas.
Wait. Please excuse you, the surprise, Miss Henderson. With a feather, you could knock me over. Wait, teach it. Chichi, Leighton.
Oh, is Chichi here, too?
Oh, sure.
Hello, Papa David.
Hey, come on, Chichi, quick, come here.
Okay, Papa David. Kate Henderson. Oh, gosh, Papa David, it's Kate Henderson.
Yes.
How are you, Chichi?
I'm fine, I'm just swell. Gosh, am I glad to see you. Oh, say, I haven't got any manners at all, have I? Come on back and sit down.
Sit down, Miss Henderson. You sit and talk with Chichi, and I'm going back and tell Stephen what kind of company he's got calling on him. Maybe he ain't even got his hair combed yet.
Thank you, Chichi. So, this is the Slightly Red Bookstore.
Yeah, and that was Papa David. Mm. Hey, is that right, what Papa David said about you coming here to see Stephen?
Well, yes, you don't mind, do you? I wanted to see you, too, but I've got some business with Stephen.
Gosh, no, I don't mind. You say some business with Stephen? What kind of business? What's it about? I mean, oh, gosh, I haven't got any right to ask you that, have I? I'm afraid I'm too excited to remember about my manners.
Oh, you don't have to worry about manners with me. We're old friends.
Yeah, sure. Just sit down here. If you get down in Papa David's old chair, it's kind of hard to get out of it.
Thanks. Well, Gigi, my honorable parent is fit to be tied.
Is he? What do you mean?
Mad. Mad as a wet hen.
Oh, he is, huh?
Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you know it or not, but it seems that Stephen has been calling around to other law offices in the city, trying to get a job.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Why, Dad thought Stephen was still on his payroll.
Oh, you mean the checks he said he'd send to Stephen for a while just in case he got well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Several of his friends have told him Stephen's been calling around and asking for a job, and, well, you can imagine how Dad would feel.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, well, what do you mean? Is he really sore? Because is he got... See, that's awful, having your father mad at Stephen. It's awful.
Well, maybe it isn't. You know, Dad's funny. He's just as sweet as he can be, but he's a lawyer. And sometimes he even seems to think like one of his musty old law books.
I guess all lawyers are like that. Stephen, too.
By the way, didn't Stephen get the check Dad sent him and the letter?
Yes. Yes, he did. But he said he wasn't going to take charity. If he couldn't work, he wouldn't take Mr. Henderson's money, so that was out.
Oh,
maybe you don't understand how it is with a man like Stephen, Katie. That, well, Papa David called him principles and Steve called him ethics. They make people do funny things. What Stephen wanted and what he still wants is the chance to do something, not to get paid for something he isn't doing. You see what I mean?
Yes, I understand.
You do? Then you know all about ethics and things.
Why, Chichi, I was raised on them. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Ethics.
Oh, then you know what I'm up against trying to do anything with Stephen.
Perfectly. I've had it all my life with Dad.
Say, I like you.
Well, it took you long enough to get around to it.
Well, I didn't get to know you very well out on the boat, but... Oh, gosh, if Mr. Henderson is sore, that's bad.
Chichi, what do you suppose I've got in this package?
Oh, I don't know. I give up. What is it?
Some papers. Records and letters and things.
Yeah?
It's all about a case that's in Dad's office. It seems that a man named Witherspoon claims he was defrauded and...
Gosh, Kate, you mean it's something for Steve to work on? A law case?
That's right. It's a complete file of the whole business. It's all mixed up, so I don't know what it's all about, but it might be a big case. And the law firm of Henderson and Henderson wants Mr. Stephen Hamilton to study it and work on it and see if this Mr. Witherspoon has any, what do they call it, cause of action.
Oh, you mean it's a case and your father wants Stephen to work on it and make up a thing about it?
Will he do it? I mean, will he accept the checks Dad wants to send him if he has some work to do?
Will he? Oh, gosh, I'll say he will. That's what he wants, work, not just money. He wants to be a lawyer, not a sponge. Hey, I just thought of something. You know, calling up all those other lawyers is all right, because if he hadn't done that, your dad wouldn't have got mad. And if he hadn't have got mad, he wouldn't have sent you down here with a case for Stephen to work on. Hey, you never know, do you? I mean, you never know whether something you do is going to turn out bad or good, but you just got to keep on doing something just the same. Stephen was trying to get any kind of a job, and now look, he's got one, his own. His own job back again because he tried to get one somewhere else. You wait right here, Kate. Now, don't you go anywhere. Don't you move. I'll be right back. Steve! Stephen! Hey, Steve, come out here quick! Stephen!
Well, Papa David certainly called that one. What difference does it make if you plant a seed and the plant grows somewhere else? Or, if you want to look at it this way, an arrow shot into the air comes home to roost. You know, when you listen to Life Can Be Beautiful, you get the feeling that Chi-Chi and Papa David and all the others are sort of like old friends, don't you? Isn't that the way it is? Friends that you look forward to visiting with every day. Now, I never heard of anybody looking forward to dishwashing, but just the same, I know a lot of you feel friendly to the soap that helps your hands look nice and gives you speedy suds at the same time. Yes, ma'am, I mean good old Ivory Flakes. Of course, you know that Ivory Flakes are just thin flakes of pure ivory soap, the soap that's safe even for a baby's skin. So that means Ivory Flakes is the only flake soap that gives your hands the protection of that famous ivory purity. The purity that helps your hands stay soft and smooth in spite of dishwashing. And what's more, you get Ivory's purity in this speedy, quick-dissolving flake form for so little cost. Why, one generous, large-size box of Ivory Flakes will do all your dishes for about 3 weeks. Tomorrow, the scene will continue. And Stephen will come out into the store and learn the good news. At least we think it's good news. Surely there isn't anything wrong with it. But what will Stephen think? And more important, what will Stephen do? Is he still worrying about ethics? Be sure and listen tomorrow and learn with Stephen whether or not life can be beautiful. This is Ralph Edwards wishing you a pleasant day for the makers of Ivory Flakes. 99.44% pure. Now, if your community has not been observing daylight saving time, life can be beautiful will come to you 1 hour later than usual, beginning Monday, September 25th. Of course, if your community has been observing daylight saving time, this program will continue to come to you at the same time as always. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Special announcement. After next Friday, Life Can Be Beautiful will not be heard on this station until Monday, October 2nd. Beginning October 2nd, the new time will be 6:30 p.m. every Monday through Friday. Thirty, the correct time, WJSV, Washington.
Dr. Brent, call surgery. Dr. Brent, call surgery. Dr. Brent, call surgery.
Road of Life, the dynamic story of Dr. Jim Brent. Brought to you by the makers of New Chipso, the faster sudsing soap for easy wash days.
Dr. Brent, call surgery. Dr. Brent, call surgery. Dr. Brent, call surgery. Dr. Brent, call
me tell you about something that's sensationally new. A wash day soap that in a recent dramatic speed test beat 8 of the most popular wash day soaps in America and beat them to a frazzle.
What's its name?
Here's its name, Chipso. It's the new, faster sudsing Chipso. It comes in the same familiar package, but what a difference in the soap.
Oh, I know Chipso. It's a swell soap. I use it all the time.
Sorry, but you probably never used this Chipso. This new Chipso has just been announced after tests that prove things that hundreds of women could hardly believe. Because new Chipso has almost incredible speed. Listen, in one series of tests, we put new Chipso up against 8 of America's most popular wash day soaps. Hear that? 8 of America's leading wash day soaps. Right then and there. New, faster sudsing Chipso proved that it dissolves up to 66% faster, that it actually makes suds up to 44% faster. In another test, Chipso proved that it had terrific dirt-getting power. In still another test, Chipso proved that because it wasn't loaded with harsh chemicals or alkalis, that it was safe for colored washables. Try the wash day sensation of 1939, the new faster sudsing Chipso. Find out for yourself that no other wash day soap beats new Chipso in safety and power and gives it split-second speed. Now, your dealer now has the new faster sudsing Chipso, so you can get new Chipso in the same familiar package today. Now, Road of Life. Today marks the opening of the sensational trial of the people of the state of Illinois versus John McEwen, an 11-year-old boy against whom the grand jury returned an indictment for murder as the first count, manslaughter as the second. A momentous day for the impressionable youngster upon whom it will leave an indelible impression for the rest of his journey along the road of life. The courtroom is filled to capacity with thrill-seeking public. Every onlooker eager for a glimpse of the boy whom they've been discussing and reading about for over a week. The boy whom the newspapers have branded as a criminal. The jury has been selected. 12 men and women who are to hand down a decision after hearing the state's attorney
tear the defendant's reputation to shreds. After hearing the human appeal of Mr. Gregory, his counsel, a plea for leniency. And now as we enter the courtroom, we see Butch, bewildered, pathetic, sitting with Mr. Gregory. Judge Gray is about to address the clerk. And as we listen in, we hear...
Swear the jury, Mr. Clerk. Kindly rise and raise your right hand. You and each of you do solemnly swear by the ever-living God that you will well and truly try the issues joined herein, and a true verdict render according to the law and evidence.
We do.
All right, Mr. State's Attorney.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. At this time, I would like to offer you my congratulations for having been selected to hear this, which may prove to be a very interesting and unusual case. After having been questioned by myself and the counsel for the defense, we feel that you men and women are of the type who are qualified to hear and judge this cause, which is now going to trial before you. Yours is an important duty, it is obvious. A young boy is on trial before you, and you are to determine fairly and impartially, from the evidence which is given from the witness stand, the guilt or innocence of the defendant. Now, when you took the jury box, you were not expected to leave all your life's experiences outside the courtroom. You were expected to use the same good sense and judgment that you use in all those experiences. Listen carefully to all the evidence, and based on those experiences and the knowledge which you obtain from them during your lifetime, you will be able to decide whether or not this boy is guilty of the crime with which he has been charged. At this time, I feel it is my duty to warn you that merely because this boy is but 11 years of age, you are not to consider that fact or let it govern your decision. After you've heard all the evidence, the court will instruct you that any infant over 10 years of age may be found guilty of any crime or misdemeanor if the evidence so warrants. I should also at this time like to warn you that the fact that a child is on trial should not affect or arouse your sympathy should the evidence indicate that he is guilty. The defense may, and probably will, no doubt, attempt to play upon your sympathies and to win...
Lord, please. I'm going to object to the state's attorney's trying to influence the jury with whatever the case and the defense might be at this time.
The objection is sustained.
Thank you.
Mr. State's Attorney, kindly confine yourself to outlining the case to the jury and remain within the province of an opening statement.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I meant no offense. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the question to be weighed is one that must be decided upon consideration of strict right only. If a crime recognized as such by our statute has been committed, if that crime be fixed upon the prisoner at the bar, then it is immaterial what his age is and what ulterior consideration might prompt you to wish that this cup might pass from his lips. Your sworn duty, your obligation as citizens concerned in the preservation of the social order as friends of the law and interested in its preservation, all speak with one voice. And that voice is awfully distinct. Do your duty, and let the consequences fall upon those who have recklessly, brutally, and criminally violated the most fundamental laws of society. Who has steeped his hands in the blood of his fellow being, and who denies doing so, is a wicked homicide.
Your Honor, I don't know why the state's attorney insists on making his speech at this time. I believe that he should be warned to confine himself to the opening statement, which Your Honor permitted him to make at this time.
Mr. State's attorney, proceed with your outline.
Very well, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the prosecution of John McEwan, the defendant, for the crime of murder and the crime of manslaughter. This accusation against the prisoner we expect to sustain by the following evidence. That on the 24th day of August last, John McEwan armed himself with a loaded pistol and with the intent to kill, did fire that pistol at one Margaret Allen, striking her in the right upper chest, and that as a result of that gunshot wound, Margaret Allen died. We intend to show that earlier in the day, this defendant had an argument with Margaret Allen. We intend to show that he sulked around that entire day, that as day grew to an end, the passion to take the life of Margaret Allen grew within the mind and breast of this defendant, and that on the date aforementioned, he turned upon the deceased and inflicted wounds from which Miss Allen died on the fourth day. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the simplest possible statement of the case. I have avoided the mention of circumstances which will necessarily appear in evidence. If we shall prove these facts by the testimony we shall bring forward, we will have made out our case. And your duty will be to award that crime the penalties prescribed by law.
Order! Order in the court!
Surgery, calling Dr. Brent. Surgery, calling Dr. Brent. Surgery, calling Dr. Brent.
And so we leave the courtroom of Judge Gray as the state's attorney finishes his opening statement, which has been of little or no significance to the young boy who sits alternately staring at him, then at his three friends in the front row, Jim, Grandpa, and Dr. Thompson, whose serious expressions give way to reassuring looks as they feel Butch's eyes turn in their direction. What will Mr. Gregory have to say when he addresses the court and jury? Be sure to listen tomorrow. Some startling news. News about the new faster sub-zinc jigsaw introduced for the first time this week and now at your dealers. News of economy. Ounce for ounce, you need 26% less of the new faster sub-zinc jigsaw in your tub, washer, or dishpan than the average of 8 of America's most popular wash day soaps. News of speed and power. When we compare the new faster sub-zinc jigsaw against 8 of America's most popular wash day soaps, it proved that it dissolved up to 66% faster and makes suds up to 44% faster. With the new faster sudsing chipsaw, your white wash will be brilliantly white and you'll still feel fresh and ready for a day's bond. For a new faster sudsing chipsaw combines dirt-getting power, real power, with all its speed. And here's the biggest news of all. If you don't agree that new faster sudsing chipsaw gives you everything we've promised, return the unused portion to your dealer and he'll refund your money. Get an economical package of the new faster sudsing chipsaw in the same familiar package today. Thank you.
What can Mr. Gregory say when he addresses the jury? Is there any way that the attorney can possibly prove to the court that a third person was present at the time of the fatal shooting of Margaret Allen? Be sure to tune in again at this same time tomorrow. Listen to Road of Life. Attention, please, for an important announcement of a change in time for Road of Life. If your community has not been observing daylight saving time, Road of Life will come to you 1 hour later, beginning next Monday, September 25th. However, if your community has been observing daylight saving time, Road of Life will come to you at the same time as today. This is Stuart Metz, speaking for the makers of Chipsaw and wishing you good afternoon.
Long wear from silk stockings, don't you? Well, the makers of famous hole-proof stockings say, wash every night in ivy flakes. Try this for extra wear from every pair. Wash your stockings every night in pure ivy flakes. I have a friend at each day's end when tasks are done and pay is ours. To hold faith high and not ask why. To love someone. This day is ours.
Crisco presents a thrilling love story entitled, This Day Is Ours. Say, here's a tip for all you ladies who expect to enter a cake baking contest this fall. Now listen closely, because I'm going to tell you how to walk off with practically every blue ribbon in the place. And here's how. You just get new Sure Mix Crisco and use it with your regular cake recipe. Why, your cake will be so much higher and lighter and tenderer than any cake you ever made before with any other shortening you can buy that the judge will probably suspect you of trickery. But, lady, it won't be trickery. It'll be the result of the greatest shortening discovery in 29 years. Yes, new Sure Mix Crisco is now vitally different from any other household shortening we know of. Why, it'll even act differently in your mixing bowl. All your ingredients will mix more thoroughly, more completely, and you'll have an entirely new type cake batter that'll give you cakes that are lighter and tenderer than any cake you ever made before. And, oh, boy, what a grand eating cake it'll be. Why, before Procter & Gamble introduced new Sure Mix Crisco, hundreds of cakes were made in the Crisco kitchens. Each cake was measured. Then Sure Mix Crisco cakes baked up higher, as much as 15% higher, depending on the type of cake. And, lady, that's the kind of cake you can get with new Sure Mix Crisco. Higher, lighter, tenderer cake. Far better eating cake than you've ever made with any other household shortening we know of. Now, when you go to get new Sure Mix Crisco, just ask for Crisco, because this new vitally improved shortening has been packed in the same familiar Crisco can with the same familiar Crisco label. There's been no change on the outside, but... what a change there is in the new Sure Mix Crisco inside. So, why don't you plan right now to enjoy the three wonderful cake-making advantages new Sure Mix Crisco now brings you. Yes, and change to new Sure Mix Crisco today. And now, this day is ours. Late last night, in Mrs. Simpson's boarding house... her lovely face lit by a shaft of moonlight. Eleanor was tense and drawn. Her eyes were heavy and weary from lack of sleep. And when Kurt said goodnight, she said...
Kurt, I've been thinking of Myrtle and the things she said to me. If I thought I'd ever be as bitter and cynical toward marriage and life, I'd rather be dead, really, I would. Oh, hold me tight, Kurt. Hold me tight because I'm afraid...
It's early the following evening. Kurt has been out looking for work all day, while Eleanor's been sewing and mending her meager wardrobe in preparation for her coming marriage. Now, alone in the front parlor after dinner, they sit in silence, both wrapped in deep thought. Finally, Eleanor looks at the shaggy-headed man she's promised to marry and says,
Kurt, I feel terrible about last night, really, I do.
Huh?
I shouldn't have gone all to pieces and said what I did.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with that, Duchess. I'm glad you told me how you feel, because, well, I'm the guy you're going to marry, and I'm the guy who ought to know.
Oh, Kurt, I'm afraid I'm an awful sissy.
Well, that's okay with me. I don't like hard-boiled women anyway.
But I shouldn't have let Myrtle Simpson break me up that way. But I couldn't help it, Kurt. She sat there and told me exactly how I felt about marrying you without a job or any real hope for the future. She looked right through me like a crystal gazer.
Yeah.
And then she explained she felt the same way just before she married Jimmy. That's what frightened me, Kurt.
Now, look, Duchess, look. Come here. Relax, will you? Relax. Yeah, that's better. Now, what are you worried about, huh? You got me, and I got you. Right?
Yes. If we don't have anything else, we have that much.
Sure.
We've got each other, haven't we?
Yeah. You know, I'm much of a philosopher, Duchess, but this much I do know. A home, a family, all life has to begin just like we are. Man and woman. Mates. Adam and Eve didn't have anything. And they did all right, didn't they? I don't know my Bible very well, but I can't remember it saying anything about Eve getting bitter and cynical and fed up with married life. And kind of they didn't have any money or pretty clothes. And of course, maybe I'm not a good guy like Adam was.
Oh, yes, you are. At least you are to me.
Well, then we can't miss. And you won't ever be like murder. Well, you're not that type.
I don't think Mamie was either before she married Jimmy. I thought so at first, but I don't know, Kurt. That's why I was so scared. Maybe this marriage without money or any hope of money done something to you. It certainly did something to Myrtle.
Now, look, I won't let it do anything to you, Duchess. I promise you.
Kurt, do you think we did right in turning down Miss Farnsworth's job?
We don't want to wait a whole year to get married, do we, Duchess? Huh?
No, I guess not, Kurt. I don't.
Oh, of course.
Kurt, who's that?
Huh?
Oh, hello, Kurt.
Hello.
Hello, Jimmy.
Is Grandma here?
No, she isn't, Jimmy. I think she's out playing off that euchre tournament that she had last night. She tied with a Garfield Flash and upset the whole euchre world.
Kurt, you clown.
Of course she did. Eleanor, look, I hate to bother you with this, but well, you knew Myrtle and you've talked to her. You've seen the way she's been acting.
Jimmy, is something wrong?
Yes. I've been out all day looking for a job, and when I came home, she was all dressed up fit to kill. I don't know where she got the money for a new dress, but she's got one. She's going out dancing.
Oh.
Don't let her go, pal. Put your foot down.
Well, I did, but she's going just the same.
Yeah, I see. Say, Duchess, I'd like to talk to Jimmy alone. We'll step out for a minute. Do you mind?
No, go ahead, Kurt.
Okay. Come on, Jimmy. Jimmy, is she going out with another man?
Oh, I don't know, but I do know what it'll mean if she goes out tonight, Kurt. This is the first time she's done it, and once she does, I'll lose her.
No, you won't, Jimmy.
I know I will. She's sick of staying in that hole we live in. Sick of not having pretty clothes and not going out because I can't afford it. Oh, Kurt, I love her so much. I don't want to lose her. I was going to ask Grandma to come and talk to her, but she isn't here. So, how about you and Eleanor seeing what you can do with her?
Well,
she was all right for a couple of days after Eleanor talked with her. Gee, I don't want to get you mixed up in my affairs, but I'm at the end of my rope. I need help.
You know, Jimmy, I don't like for Eleanor to hear too much about this kind of stuff. After all, we're getting married ourselves.
Oh, I know you are, but Myrtle thinks Eleanor and you are swell. She might listen to you. Oh, please, Kurt, come on over and talk to her before it's too late, will you? Help me, please.
Well, hey, Duchess, do you think you need a wrap?
A wrap, Kurt? What for?
You and I are going over to Jimmy's house.
Well, hello, Kurt.
Hello.
Hello, Eleanor.
Hello, Myrtle.
What'd you do, Jimmy? Round up a convention? Why didn't you bring the police force while you were at it?
Oh, listen, Myrtle, Eleanor and Kurt wanted to come over and talk to you.
You aren't man enough to keep me here by yourself. You have to round up the whole neighborhood to help you.
Now, wait a minute, Myrtle.
Kurt, don't argue with her.
Listen, Jimmy, what have you got to offer me in the way of entertainment? A six-month-old five-cent magazine and a glass of imitation root beer. We haven't even got a radio, and you want me to stay home when I got a chance to go out for once in my married life and have a good time and not be ashamed or worried whether my skin's showing through an old dirty dress. You got nerve enough to go over and grab the curtain, Eleanor, and make them think you're the pure, abused husband whose wife is cruel and heartless and no account? Well, Jimmy, you may be right. As far as I'm concerned, we're all washed up.
Okay, Myrtle. That's the way you feel.
That's a lovely dress, Myrtle.
Yes, I think it is, too.
I hope you have a good time. Where are you going?
Out. With Sammy Foster. I suppose you want to know that, too.
Sammy Foster?
Yes, Sammy Foster. He's asked me to go out dance with him, and I don't see any reason why anything's wrong with that.
Where'd you get that dress? Did he buy it for you?
Yes. He sent it to the house this afternoon. I didn't want to take it at first, but when I tried it on, I couldn't send it back. It was too lovely. And I've been wanting to do something like this for too long a time to turn down the chance now.
Now who's Sammy Foster, Jimmy?
Oh, he's a crooked lawyer in town. He's got a rotten reputation. Oh, Myrtle, please don't go out with that man. Well, what'll Grandma say and the people in town? Everybody knows him.
Jimmy, for a whole year I worried about what Grandma would think, what you would think, what the grocery man would think, the neighbors, the whole town. But now I'm through worrying about what people think. From now on, I'm going to worry about Myrtle and nobody else. There's no harm in my going out dancing tonight. Sammy Foster's a bachelor. He isn't in love with me, and I don't give two hoots in a canyon for him. But he's fun. He's alive. And he's got money enough to take me to places I haven't seen for over a year. He's got money enough to show me a good time for once in my life.
But, Myrtle, it doesn't make sense. How can you have a good time with a man you don't care anything about if it's going to cost you the respect of the man you love, your husband?
Listen, Eleanor. When you're married to Kurt for a whole year, and you find out he can't give you the things a woman loves and wants, the little things that make a woman's life worth living, you'll whistle a different tune. Your head's all full of sugar plums and lovebirds right now. And you think I'm a selfish woman who ought to be tied to a post and lashed like they did in the Middle Ages. Well, maybe you're right, Eleanor. But wait until you're married to Kurt for a year. Let him be poor, without a job or even the hope of one. And you'll probably do just what I'm going to do.
Myrtle Simpson, bewildered, disillusioned, unable to find happiness for the man she married. Will her pathetic story influence Eleanor and Kurt, even though they are now determined to marry? Say, the next time you shop for groceries, you'll probably hear more women than ever asking for Crisco. And you know why? Well, Crisco isn't just Crisco anymore, that's all. No, ma'am. It's new Sure Mix Crisco now. And it brings you three new wonderful cake-making advantages. Yes'm, as our baking tests show, new Sure Mix Crisco will give you higher cakes, lighter cakes, and tenderer cakes than you ever made before with any other household shortening we know of. And, what grand eating cakes they'll be, too. Now, maybe you don't think that a shortening can make so much difference in cakes. Well, there's one good way for you to find out. Just use new Sure Mix Crisco yourself. Now, Sure Mix Crisco is packed in the same familiar Crisco can with the same familiar label. So just ask for Crisco. But when you use this vitally different shortening, you'll know why it's new Sure Mix Crisco now. And here's news, lady. Listen to me. Do you want $5,000 cash to drop into your bank account? Yes'm, I said $5,000, and I mean $5,000. That's the grand prize in Crisco's exciting new all-cash slogan contest. And listen, there are 100 other prizes, each $50 cash. For complete information, set your dial to this program next Monday, September 25th. Don't forget, Now, tomorrow, Kurt Curtis talks turkey to Myrtle Simpson. A dramatic scene with this straightforward young man. A moving scene with this young woman who has yet to experience the thrill of lifting her head high and saying with sincerity, "This day is ours." Oh, let me remind you again, folks, before I forget it. If your community has not been observing daylight saving time, "This Day Is Ours" will come to you 1 hour later than usual, beginning Monday, September 25th. That's next Monday. Of course, if your community has been observing daylight saving time, this program will continue to come to you at the same time as always. This is Melvin Allen wishing you a good day for the makers of Crisco. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. Clock the correct time. Regatta radiogram, quote, "Death-defying outboard motorboat races, Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. off Haynes Point," unquote. WJSV, Washington.